French. Some guys like it quiet. Some guys like it loud. This is.
You know, Gatorade needs to look like he needs some exercise. I don't know.
Of course, the conditions now that he has to play the shot test anyone.
You knew he would. You knew he would.
Oh my goodness.
They've come a long way together, Jim, those two. It's a great story.
Welcome into another episode of Dialed In, a podcast by the High Cotton Club. I'm your co-host, Connor Hendrickson, a.k.a. Lefty Sauce. Missing my co-host this week, John Stewart, as he got called into daddy duty. We understand things happen. We hope the little man gets to feeling better. But a very exciting episode nonetheless, as we are joined by our first captain from another roost. It's Chris Daly, a.k.a. Hibernating Bear, joining from the RACDG NYC. It's a lot of letters, but after you get into the episode, it'll all make sense. So thank you so much to him for joining us for this week, and we hope that you enjoy the conversation. Before we get into that conversation, a few housekeeping items as always, because even though the weather is not great in the High Cotton Club right now, spring is starting it's approaching. It's starting to roll. So we need to get prepared, and that comes with our spring 2024 calendar, the barn burner at Kenny Perry's on February 3rd. I looked out. I know it's still a ways out for the weather, but it's looking high 50s, maybe low 60s. Really good day to get out on the golf course after all the cold that we've had and all the rain that we're enduring right now. But registration for that event closes Saturday night at midnight. Saturday night of this week, that's, 126 at midnight. So make sure that you are getting scheduled for the registered for the barn burner, as well as the High Cotton Classic. High Cotton Classic, the 7th edition, the Jack Daniels edition. Registration is live for folks in Kentucky, Tennessee, and Alabama. So make sure you're taking advantage of those opportunities to get involved, as well as registration for the Mother Clucker, the High Cotton Club's member guest. Registration is winding down, and we really need to fill some teams quickly. Registration closes February 1st. We need everybody's payments by February 1st. So if you're interested in going down the old Waverly, Mossy Oak, maybe playing the MSU golf course, as well as going to a baseball game at the Carnegie Hall of College Baseball, this is an event that you need to get plugged in with. And this is an event that's open to the refuge. So maybe you're listening just because Chris is on the pod this week. You need to get south. This is a great opportunity to do it. There's going to be folks from all across the country getting involved. And so we look forward to seeing whoever is going to be there for the Mother Clucker, the second edition of what was a great event last year, as well as a little bit of an update on the Farmers Cup. Farmers Cup on March 2nd. That's going to be a great event with the Crossroads Co-op from Indiana at Park Mammoth. And we're very excited as they are looking to fill their final spot. So maybe you're listening from outside of High Cotton Country, or maybe you're a High Cotton guy and you know somebody up in Indiana who's not plugged in. Get them involved. Get them on the Crossroads Co-op team, because we're going to have a couple teams of 16 going to battle at Park Mammoth, and we look forward to doing that in early March. So without any further ado, we want to get to Mr. Chris Daly, a.k.a. Hibernating Bear, presented this week by AAA Glass. Dilly D, a huge supporter of the High Cotton Club, dating all the way back to the High Cotton Classic, and we very much appreciate AAA Glass hopping on to support the High Cotton Club and Dialed In, a podcast by the High Cotton Club, because AAA Glass is a locally owned company in High Cotton Country since 2003. They specialize in auto glass and shower doors. No job is too big or too small, and they can handle any glass in your vehicle or any shower, from residential homes to hotels and apartments. They're located all over the southeastern United States, with brick and mortar locations in Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, Mississippi, and Kentucky. It means they can service any of the High Cotton Club members with fantastic customer service and a quick response time. They've embodied the Southern hospitality that the High Cotton Club is known for, and so we encourage anybody in the need to reach out to AAA Glass. Without any further ado, let's get to Chris Daly, a.k.a. Hibernating Bear. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome into Dialed In, a podcast by the High Cotton Club, episode 76. I'm your co-host, Connor Henderson, my co-host, John Stewart, out last minute, got the call, sick kid, you know, our guest this week, he knows what dealing with sick kids is all about. So in Stu's absence, we're very excited to welcome Mr. Chris Daly, aka Hibernating Bear of the RACDG NYC. It's a lot of letters, but it makes a lot of sense when we start to break it down. So, Chris, welcome to the pod.
What's up, Connor? I'm glad to be here. I'm excited. My first podcast, so I'm looking forward to this. Let's do this.
Well, you've been a friend from afar for a while, so it's a real pleasure to be able to have you on. And yeah. Talking about that, you know, we kind of had some, not interactions, but we became aware of each other on the Refuge after the whole debacle around the Roost Regional Qualifier and stuff like that. Back in the first year of Roos. But then we actually got the pleasure of being around each other and meeting each other at the NIT that year at Jack's Beach. Yep. And then once again at the Dangerfield. So, yeah, it's been great to be able to meet you a couple times and now to be able to catch up.
Yeah, and I don't know if you know this, but at the NIT, well, so for the audience, you and I were on the same flight. You ended up winning that flight. And I ended up putting all my money on you. And you didn't come through.
Yeah. Trust me, there's a lot of scar tissue around the NIT now. It is what it is. I appreciate the confidence. But you also gave me a little bit of that boost because we'll talk about it at the end of the pod. I considered you part of that old guard of the Refuge. And, you know, after everything, I was coming to make a name for myself in the High Cotton Club. So I can, you know, even though I let you down, you helped me along the way.
No, man. I mean that first NIT, it was great. It was great meeting you, and obviously, we hit it off pretty good. And then, yeah, and then up at up on Cape Cod, that was pretty cool. You coming in shivering, your Southern boy, so cold, and we had some fun that day. Although I didn't play with you. I ended up playing with a bunch of Flyers guys because I actually joined the Flyers club last year, so that was my chance to kind of get in the fold with them. So I didn't get to see you much, but I did get to see you shiver in that morning.
Yeah, I just didn't come prepared. That's all that was. You know, it's a summer event. I expected summer weather. But, you know, at the same time, we just got done this past week, 7-8 inches of snow, several days of below zero wind chills. And we have that humid cold too. So it's not exactly easy down here in the South. And, you know, our counterparts up at the Crossroad Co-op in Indiana, they thought last year at the Farmers Cup they were going to, you know, cruise to a victory because it was cold, and it was not so. You know, just because we're in the South doesn't mean that we can't grit and bear it. But man, you're exactly humid. Right. That day I was freezing.
I've heard about that humid cold too. That humid cold sounds just terrible. I know they had that at the, I think the Beijing Olympics, the winter Olympics they had, and they were talking about how it's humid and cold and it just sounds freaking miserable. So yeah, I feel for you. But that was a good day. Yeah, no. That was a fun day. That was a fun course.
Well, it was an opportunity for me to get up to a part of the country that I had never been to, never been up to your neck of the woods in the Northeast, and still haven't been to New York. But obviously you are the captain of the RACDG NYC, as we talked about. But it goes long before this was actually a ruse. So why don't you fill in our guys and maybe some other folks who don't know exactly how your group formed. And
you've been there
from the very beginning, so I don't think there's anybody better to tell the story.
Yeah. So RACDG stands for the Royal and Ancient Club, or Royal and Ancient Club of Dishonorable Golfers. I might be getting one of those wrong, but Dishonorable Golfers rather than the Royal and Ancient Club of Honorable Golfers, which is obviously what the RNA is based off of and the original rules of golf were based off of. So it was actually started, so the RACDG was started, it was started on the Refuge by Crawford Cad, the Cad Says, who's no longer really on the Refuge. I think he still has an account, but he's not there. But he started it and said, hey, you know what, let's kind of create communities. He was in Great Britain, so that's where kind of the RACDG thing comes from. He was in Great Britain. He had a house here in, not in New York, but, out in, Idaho, where his mother lives. And he's like, hey, let's create a bunch of communities around the world. And like, if we're in that kind of that area of the world, like we can kind of meet up with people and like, we can create local communities. And so, yeah, it was really, it was New York. It was, kind of the South, I'll say like North Carolina, Northern California, Southern California. I'm probably forgetting one or two there, but maybe Minnesota. I don't know if they were involved. And then GB and I, and so we had a Northeast chapter. That Northeast chapter was like 20 guys at the beginning, and then it grew to like, I don't know, let's call it maybe like 75 people in the WhatsApp. We created our WhatsApp chat, and we were like, we probably need to split this into kind of Philly, New York, and Boston. And so that's what we did. And so I ended up taking over the captaincy of the New York chapter, which we can maybe talk about later when it comes to old school versus new school refuge. Nandy ended up taking over the Boston chapter, and Philly, I don't know who ended up taking over Philly. I forget, but they had their own thing. But it wasn't Revac at the time. And yeah, so I, for some stupid reason, decided to kind of captain in the New York chapter at that point. And obviously we ended up having conversations. So as far as I understand it, Cad Crawford, who created this RACDG, ended up kind of talking to Neil and the NLU guys about them being like, hey, you guys want to take this over? And I think this could be a complete rumor, and maybe the NLU guys will listen to this and kind of shit on me, but I think they're like, nah, we're good. And then they ended up coming back like a year or two later. And I actually had a conversation. Neil wanted to get on the phone with me to talk about like, hey, what do you guys do for this? Because we're thinking about creating roosts. And so we had a conversation, me and a couple other guys from the New York chapter, spoke to him about like what we do, how we kind of go about it, and blah, blah, blah. I don't know if he ended up taking any of that advice. I'm not the best with kind of selling stuff, but yeah, that was like kind of the beginning of their, I assume they were kind of deep into the sauce of kind of trying to figure out roosts. And so they wanted to chat with me about how we've done it here in New York. Cause, you know, at that point, I think we ultimately ended up creating when we talked to them, we had a website, we were kind of building stuff out. You guys down in the High Cotton Club have taken to another level, but yeah, we kind of turned this into a pretty good thing here in New York.
Definitely. There's a lot of context before the roost even came to be. And I think that's something that people forget a lot of times. Obviously you talk about the High Cotton Club. We were different because we didn't really have anything to do with the refuge. We were just running the match play, but still there's a lot of context for a bunch of these different groups. And so I'm really happy to hear some of that context from your perspective, at least up there in NYC. Now that it has become a roost, are there any major differences? Are there anything that you feel like are a lot better, you know, what are your perceptions of that?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. So obviously when the RACDG was built, it was specifically like guys from the refuge. So we had obviously something very, very similar, in common in regards to that fact that like we all loved NLU, we all were on the refuge. We were, you know, again, at that time, I'll talk old school, new school refuge. By the time old school refuge, like we were all kind of familiar with each other, from an online standpoint. And then turning it into a roost, it's changed the dynamic. I wouldn't say it's bad at all. It's just changed the dynamic. We've kind of lost, I guess, the RACDG roots that we had, and I really tried to keep that, but I'd probably say that's kind of gone at this point. And we've even talked about potentially rebranding a little bit. I still love it, and I probably am the one that's holding on to it the most. But with the roost, while we have a lot of more people coming in from an NLU standpoint, we also have a lot of people that were around. So we ended up during COVID, and I actually just sent a survey around because I do an annual survey. And I said, hey, when did you guys join this thing? And a lot of people ended up coming through the refuge, but they weren't really NLU fans or like deep into the refuge, which was totally fine. But once they found the roost, and we have at the time a WhatsApp and now a Discord, they've completely separated from LU. And there's, you may notice it, like there's very little New York people. There's very little New York representation because everybody's come into Discord and just given up on the refuge, not NLU in the sense, but on the refuge, and like have totally gone into Discord and like don't really care about, maybe I think it's something, what I want to, I don't have the survey in front of me, but I'm saying like maybe like 30-ish% have don't care about the Roost, so, or don't care about like the stuff around the Roost. So that's one thing that I struggle with, not struggle with, but it's something that I think about, is like kind of tying things back in with, it's honestly, it's not the new guys, because the new guys are coming through NLU. It's the old guard that doesn't really care about NLU anymore. And I'm somebody, as you know, that still is very much on the refuge, very much an NLU person. And so I struggle with that, but it's been good. Like the Roost has been, we've gained a lot of people. We've got a lot more interest. We got a lot more followers. Don't talk to me about social media, because I don't do any of that. I don't barely even own social media accounts. I'm an old man. Others kind of take care of that, while I kind of just make sure that we stay on the rails. And so like I think a lot about the fact that like we've kind of lost the RACDG roots, but it's something that's just going to kind of evolve, and it's totally fine. Like we're a thriving community. It's just a different kind of community now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're alone in that sense at all. Obviously, we had what we had, but we grew a lot through the refuge. And now you really don't see, like you were talking about, you don't see a bunch of New York flares on the refuge. You don't see a bunch of High Cotton flares. I'm the most active, just because I'm trying to make sure that I'm staying in touch. And then we have, you know, Clay up in Indiana, Will down in Alabama, Michael out in East Tennessee. But other than that, you know, Chuck's out in East Tennessee too. But those East Tennessee guys don't even get involved with our events as much. They're two of the guys that kind of get more of that through the refuge. Yeah. Yeah, like you said, having that Discord and just those multiple channels to be able to communicate and stuff. And
I will say this though, like our community, like we are a tight knit community. Mm-hmm. Being in the Northeast and kind of being like, obviously in the Northeast, we have the advantage of being a pretty close-knit community compared to, like, geographically compared to probably most Roost, to be honest with you. Just anybody in the Northeast, like even now we have a Baltimore specific Roost, a Philly specific Roost, a Boston one, and a New York one. Now New York, we go up to Albany, we go out to Western New Jersey, even into, we have guys now in Pennsylvania because they've kind of commuted out to Pennsylvania, and even down in Philly that we still have boys in. I mean, even Chick-fil-A is part of our Discord, because she wanted to be a part of it, as she's, you know, but she's a Philly person now a Vegas person. But yeah, up to Albany, all the way out to Eastern Connecticut. I mean, one of my very good friends is from the OG refuge, Clark Barr, is out in Eastern Connecticut, and he's still, you know, he probably should more be Boston, but he just loves the New York guys so much that he sticks with us. So yeah, we have that advantage in terms of geographically being close. So we're a very tight knit group, and we play a lot of golf together, a lot of golf together.
That's good stuff. That's what I was going to ask. Are there, you talked about kind of maybe losing the roots from that a little bit. Is it just that social aspect and kind of the online aspect, or how is your kind of event setup changed, and how are you looking ahead into 2024 event wise?
Yeah. So honestly, not too much. Turning into a Roost did not change us from an event standpoint too much, outside of creating like an NIT major. Unlike you guys, we don't, I mean, obviously we have a shorter season up here. So really from a New York standpoint, I mean, halfway decent golf starting in April. I mean, people play in the winter, but to decent golf where we can kind of play potentially every weekend is really April through early November, maybe. So we don't have a ton of what I call kind of major events. And so those are, so for 2024, in the past, we started with our first event being in May. which was at one of my favorite courses, kind of we've had it at a couple places, but kind of my spiritual home is a place up in the Hudson Valley, which is just north of me. So I'm just north of New York City. I'm in Westchester County, which is kind of where I'm 8 minutes from Sleepy Hollow, 20 minutes from Wingfoot and Quaker Ridge and blah, blah, blah. And so one of my spiritual home is kind of up in this, it's called Links at Unionville, which is about 40 minutes north of me, up in a couple counties north of me, kind of halfway between New York City and Albany. So that was usually our opening event. So this year in 2024, we're actually changing that. Our flagship event is at Innis, which is what some people call the back nine of Sweetens. It was a golf course. It was an 18-hole golf course. It's in the Hudson Valley. It was an 18-hole golf course prior to the current owners taking it over. And they had King Collins come in and build a 9-hole golf course. And the rest of it is kind of like I'm almost going to call it a hippie type resort. But they kept a 9-hole golf course that is, I haven't been to Sweetens yet. I'm hoping to change that this year. We can get into that later. But it's kind of like what they call the back nine of Sweetens. I don't think it's nearly as good as from what I've heard, but the greens are just as wild as the greens at Sweetens. So that's our flagship event that we're going to now kick off in 2024, which is a two-man kind of a two-man team event. And we have 48 guys that come out. We rent out the course for the day. And we've been doing this for 3 years. This coming year will be the third or maybe the fourth year. I want to say the third year. And that's always in early June. So it's a two-man event. We play 9 holes of alt shot, 9 holes of best ball, and then 9 holes of singles. And then it's split up into, it's kind of like what we, kind of similar to what's done at the NIT is, you're split up into pods, and then the best teams from those pods, the guys with the most points from those pods, come out and we do a championship derby, a 5-hole championship derby. That it's kind of an alternate course there. So that's now going to become our first event of the year, which is actually in June. So it's early June. And then we're moving the event that's in May to September. So we have the June event at Innis, which is the grazing. Then we do an event at Trenton Country Club, which is a private course that one of our guys is a member at. We're going to do that in July. That's called The Torch. And that was actually a pretty cool story in terms of last year. We used to do The Torch. We kind of moved The Torch around. And last year, like going to the PGL type stuff, we were going to do a PGL event at this guy's course. And so many people were interested that we turned it into an actual like Roost event. So we're now going to run that back bigger and better this year. So that's going to be in July. And then August, we do our NIT major, which will be at Keeney Park. And oh, actually, no, sorry. We are not. I don't think we're going back to Keeney Park this year. So Keeney Park is a Deborah Wemmett is a pretty famous architect here in the Northeast that I don't know if too many people, unless you're a Friday guy, are aware of. But he built St. George's, which Friday is going to this year, and we have a member there. But Devereaux Emmett built the front nine of Keeney Park, and it's in Hartford, Connecticut. And then the back nine was built pretty much in the same fashion, but not by Emmett, by somebody else that I'm not going to think of right now. So we used to go there, but Hartford, Connecticut is pretty far from New York City. It's good an hour and a half, 2 hours from New York City. So we're going to find a place around the tri-state area for that. And then in September, we're going up to the Links at Unionville, which is the course that I was talking about. And then end of September is going to be the shut. So the shut is what the RACDG was originally about. Is every year you have at the end of the year, you have an event called the shut, which is kind of your year end event. And that's going to hopefully be at Bethpage. So not Bethpage Black, but Bethpage actually has 4 other courses that are probably just as good. Some of them are just as good from a playability standpoint. The Black is a real kick in the ass. So yeah, we're going to do that. And then we probably have some plans for some upstate Albany area. We have a couple members. We have a couple people that are members at some good courses in the Albany area that we're going to do a late October event at, when the leaves are changing, and should be fun. So long winded, like we got a lot of things coming for 2024. And then we're getting into some Roos qualifier stuff, which we can get into if you want.
Yeah, no, sounds like you guys are busy and making the most of your short season. I know that even though you guys don't have the best weather year round, you guys probably have the best simulator golf in the world, I would say, right? I mean, 5-iron kind of flagshipped out there, and it seems like they're kind of the standard. I'm not a simulator guy, so I don't really know, but it seems like the options have to be pretty bountiful around there.
Yeah, most of those guys are pretty good about getting into the sim. 5-iron's huge in the city. We have a good relationship with this place called Brooklyn Greens in the city in Brooklyn. We actually had a party there this year, and they've been really good to us. We actually have somebody that's a employee at one of the 5-iron places, so that's been nice for the guys. I am personally not one. I am one that will put the clubs away for the winter, and you know, I have a family, I have 3 kids, so like it's a good time for me to kind of get my hall pass, get my wife credits in during the winter, so I can use those up during the summer. There's a big joke that some might not say it's a joke in our roost about me being a deadbeat dad, and when it comes summertime, I'm out on the golf course and not paying attention to my kids. So it might be somewhat true, but.
Well, it's a good strategy to, cash in those credits while you can. But I think it's a credit to everybody throughout the country. Obviously, we're very fortunate, even though we do have the bad weather like we have had over the past couple weeks. Golf this day and age is kind of, you're going to get whatever you want out of it. If you're willing to take those extra steps and find a simulator and all that stuff, year-round golf is here. It's just really a matter of how much you want to. I'm very much like you, kind of wintertime. I'm busier, outside. So it's a good time to, reset the body, reset the game. And, you always get that excitement when you go back to the range for the first time and you have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, I told you. I told you before we started this, I was listening to Aaron's podcast just to kind of get a feel of what's happening here. And you had mentioned, I guess you guys were talking about Sweetens. There was no driving range and you couldn't warm up. That's me. I'm not one to practice, but I'm one that needs to warm up. Like people, I don't think, I hope there's not a video of this, but for people that don't know, I'm a very big guy. I need to get the body limber.
No, I'm right there with you. And it's just good to see which way the ball is going to miss that day. But talking about, you talked earlier about your PGL league, and I think that this is something, before we get into it, High Cotton Club guys, we're not going to do it. All right. We're solid now. We can evaluate it for the 2025 season. But the 2024 season is locked in. We're not changing anything. But I think it is a very cool thing that y'all do up there. And the way that we have kind of regions around here anyway, it could be very cool for us. So I'm curious for you to explain it in a little bit more detail than I've just seen on the Refuge.
Yeah, let me try to do my best here. So the PGL obviously is taken off of the back of an idea of it's completely stealing the idea of the PGL that was originally proposed before LIV took over. I ended up coming up with this literally. I don't know if I was in bed, but I came up with it one night, and I got on my phone and in notes, I was just like, all right, here's all the rules. And it's pretty much what I ended up coming up with is what we kind of do now. So what the PGL is I ended up, we ended up creating what's now 7 teams. So we have 7 owners. So I reached out to some of the more popular and/or some of the more what I want to say, like some of the more bigger characters in our chapter. And I said, hey, do you guys want to be owners of a team within this league? And so we ended up getting seven. At the time it was eight, but we're down to seven. We ended up getting seven owners. And basically those owners drafted, people signed up for the PGL and the owners drafted their teams. And really what it comes down to is the teams then declare matches against the other teams, whether it be, just one-on-one or a four ball. For four ball, so one-on-one, it's 1 point up for grabs. For four ball, if you play a four ball match, there's actually 2 points for the match. And you can actually end up creating kind of alliances in the sense that two teams can kind of team up against one team. So you can have a team from a player from team A and a player from team B play two players from team C. And whoever wins that, they end up getting 2 points. If they have it, they split that and so on and so forth. For single matches, it's easy. It's one-on-one. So to step back, with the owners, they had complete autonomy on what they wanted to do with their team. They all created their own names. They all created their own logos. So I know you guys are into merch. Three or four of the teams have a lot of merch. We've done this for the past 2 years, and the Rainers Stallions have won the first two seasons. They have an owner who I will not name his name because I refuse to acknowledge him. They have an owner who has just been he's gone all in on this, and he's really created a team environment, and they have just absolutely steamrolled. They barely won the first year, and they kind of barely won the second year, but they still won. But they have some great merch. They have cardigans with their logo on it. They have, they've created a whole sort of catalog of things. And so what we ended up doing is the team that won got to keep their team. So, all the members on the team get to stay. Everybody else gets redrafted. The owners stay, but they get to keep three players, and then everybody else gets redrafted. Now we might change.
They get to pick that three.
They get to pick the three players they want to keep. Yeah, and then everybody else gets redrafted. Now we're probably in. We still haven't decided. It's still up for debate, but we might change that this year, where we might just keep the teams as they are going forward. And kind of really truly create rivalries and really truly create like a culture within every team rather than people kind of moving around all the time. We have a PGL channel with a lot of sub channels in Discord that is just an absolute blast in terms of the shit talking, in terms of the all the talk. One of the guys in our group created this just phenomenal Excel spreadsheet that just keeps track of all the standings. Very easy to put in the matches, who won. We have presses, so you're allowed what we call multipliers. So if you want to press down on a match, you get two multipliers per year for the owner to say like, hey, I want to press on this. It's just the Discord of it is just phenomenal, like the shit talking and just everything around it. It's a lot of fun. So there's the Rainer Stallions, which the other piece to this too is a couple of the owners and people in it are members of some pretty good clubs around here, and it's turned into them like hosting a couple of like small PGL like 8 or 12 people at their club and creating whatever that is, like, 4 to 6 matches at their club. We have a member at Essex County Country Club, and he does something every year. We have a member at Trenton that I mentioned, he does something. Springbrook, which is a low-key good course in New Jersey. These are all Trenton's at Tillinghast. Essex County is a Rainer / Tillinghast. Like, that's low-key awesome. So it's fun from that standpoint in terms of just getting people together. It's another excuse to kind of just create like smaller events that aren't our official events. And just the, like I said, just the Discord around it is just so good. It's a lot of fun.
No, I love the idea of it. I don't remember if it was at the NIT that we were first talking about it or if I saw something about it on the Refuge, but I really like the idea. But my only hesitation for the High Cotton Club is that it feels like it might be, you know, the can of worms that we open that closes the High Cotton Classic. You know, when you're talking about match play and merch and getting out, like that's what the High Cotton Classic is. You know, fall is four ball, spring is singles, and it gives you that opportunity to play for points, play for something, and get some cool swag along the way. That discourse that you're talking about. So I love the idea.
We do. So PGL is just one thing that we do through the year. Like we obviously have our events, but we also do a match play. We also do a quote unquote order of merit type thing, which we're changing this year. So the PGL, I may have gotten out over my skis with some of this stuff because like some of the stuff gets lost in the mix. And it's not as popular as other things. Cause the PGL has kind of definitely taken over and it's own monster at this point, but we do the match play. I mean, 2 years ago we had 85 guys or something in the match play, and we decided this year or last year that we're going to just cut it off at 64. So it's whoever signs up first. That's the same thing we're kind of doing this year, but the PGL has become its own thing, but we are doing other things, and I'm even thinking about doing like a true like club championship this year with like the low caps and no strokes and just see who comes out on top.
I love that. Yeah, obviously we try to model it a little bit after the High Cotton Club, a little bit after Country Club with the member guest, member, but yep. We haven't gotten to that point where we're just going straight gross event. So yep. I would love to see somebody else break that threshold. But you were talking about the order of merit and how you are doing that this year versus what you did last year. It's another thing that while it's not specifically unique to you guys, it is different from what we do in the High Cotton Club. So I think last year was more Euro-based, this year more Cali-based. Can you kind of explain the thought process?
Yeah, so we sort of stole what the GBI guys did, and shout out to those guys over there because they ended up creating a page on their – they have a website that actually tracks all that for them. And they created a page for us to kind of do what we do. We changed it up a little bit. I won't get into details at all, but we changed it up a little bit versus what they do. It wasn't a huge hit because basically what happened, what we did is you had to play a minimum of 14 matches and a maximum, I want to say, of 21 matches or something like that. And you had to declare that round on the website before you played that match. It was literally Stableford. So what ultimately happened was, as long as you played the minimum amount of matches, whoever had the best average Stableford for the year would win the title. It didn't really get the interest that I was expecting it, and there wasn't a lot of discourse on that front. So we're changing it this year to kind of go, as you said, to what Patty's doing out in NorCal. And Patty and I, he's definitely one of the people that I really need to meet in person. Patty and I have been talking for years. Gremlin golfer on the Refuge, by the way. We've been talking for years, and he's kind of stole from stuff from us, and I'm now stealing stuff from him. So what they do is you play one match a month that you declare as your round, and whoever for that month, they will have standings one through 10 in terms of who had the best Stableford score, or if you want to call it quota, whatever it is, Stableford or quota, whoever had the best score gets first, second, and so on down to 10. And then if you come in first, you get 10 points. If you come in 10th, you get 1 point. And then, over the year, whoever has the most points at the end of the year will win that. Now it's still TBD in terms of, do we ultimately like in October have kind of a top three or top four sort of final to see who's declared the champion. But that's what we're going to change to. And the goal is to do that through Unknown. As I know you're a big proponent of Unknown. I'm still trying to get my arms around it. And I've actually brought on a couple people to take control of that. But we definitely think we can do that through Unknown. And we're going to obviously do all of our events through Unknown. But that's something that we plan on doing this year, and kind of the changes we're making to the order of merit. So it should be exciting. I'm kind of excited to do this because, like, you don't then have to play. There's no minimum, there's no maximum. And if you miss a month and don't play with somebody, like, you can still have a chance at the overall. You just have to play well in the other months, blah, blah, blah. So it's not too much of a commitment. And I think it'll get a little bit more discourse in terms of monthly standings, where you are, and then the overall standings. It'll be good. So we'll see. We're in the winter here, so we're still doing all the planning on that front.
Sure. Like you mentioned, obviously, we run jackpots through Unknown Golf, so that's similar to the kind of the points and building that, and we go to a Final Four at the end of the Roost Regional qualifying. But then we also just take qualifiers from all of our events to a season-ending event for our regional qualifying. Yep. So, all that's obviously through Unknown Golf, so I look forward to hearing your feedback and all of your guys hopefully – finding that a little bit easier and smoother and improving the experience. But when we actually start talking about regional qualifying and stuff like that, what is y'all's path? Because if you're joining a Roost, I understand, you know, when people join our Roost, we have like a 14-page overview that you have to go through. And, you know, I know that we're not the only ones because we've been talking for how long now and we haven't even got to, like, how do you qualify for the regional? There's a lot of stuff that goes on throughout the year, and you know, it's a lot more than people kind of would think surface value. So through, you know, your events, through the PGL, through your match play, through the order of merit, how do you make the regional qualifying team?
In New York we've struggled with this a little bit because obviously to qualify, the regional qualifier for us is have to be by the end of July. So with our shortened year, like, we kind of have to figure something out. I've struggled with this between April and really the end of June is what we do to ultimately decide who's going to qualify for that. So what we've always done and we will continue to do is the team that wins our event at Innis, they'll qualify for the Roost qualifier. And then our plan for this year, and we're still ironing this out. One of our new guys in my committee came up with this, is to create three or four events around the region. So maybe one in Albany, one in Connecticut, one in New Jersey, one in Long Island. Excuse me, where we maybe it'd be 12, 16 guys at each one of those. And the top three or four end up qualifying from that event, qualifying for the Roost qualifier finals. So we'll do all those qualifiers in April, May, and maybe early June. And then whoever comes out of that, the top four from those three or four events will end up playing in a final event at the end of June. That will ultimately determine who the final two guys are that will qualify, and then we'll have alternates off the back of that. Because, like I said, we have a lot of guys that want to do the Roost stuff. Not everybody's in the nest, as I found out in the past years. And so, if they don't want to sign up for it, then we end up going to kind of the alternates on that. It's happened a few times with our things, so it worked. It hasn't worked out great because we keep getting beat by Philly. But we've had a couple of good teams the past couple of years, and I'm hoping, in terms of doing this Roost qualifier, we'll really kind of iron out who's kind of playing the best golf at that time and be able to represent us in what usually is late July for us in terms of the regional Roost qualifier.
Well, that, and you're also right off the bat just taking the guys into consideration, pretty much who want to be there. You know, it's not just, you know, running through your entire catalog of who has played, competed, and qualified. It's, all right, this is what you're vying for. Now, if you want to come do it. If you can make it, you make it. So, I think that's great. And obviously, as you guys, like you said, you've had a couple of good teams, but the Electric Factory has been a factory. You got to make small tweaks and changes. And
I want to say one thing. The first year, Philly, they beat us.
I know where they're going.
They beat us by a half point, maybe a point, in the first year's event. And Casey was a part of that Philly team. And she is the one that ended up bringing in that last point that they needed. She beat our guy on the last hole, my co-captain, or vice president, whatever you want to call him. She beat him on the last hole. And they ended up going to the Roos finals, and she did not play for that team. She ended up playing for the NLU people. So I just want to point that out. I've made that very clear on the Refuge, and I want to make that very clear in public.
You know, and then the Electric Factory knocked us off. So you know, it's that meme of the domino. It ended up in a lot of things happened because of that one thing, but.
I do want to say I love those Philly guys. That first year, I was part of that. Meeting Revac, who I talked a lot with before that, and obviously all the other guys, Mass Hacker up in Boston, who I've been close with for a long time now, internet close with for a long time. That was a fun weekend. Tibbs has obviously become a legend in the Roos qualifier or the Roos regional and the Roos finals. And who else was there? But yeah, those guys were fantastic. It was a fun weekend.
Yeah, Bobby T, he's a great time. And
Bobby's the one that ended up replacing Casey on that team.
I'm starting to see the full picture now, but no, I'm right there with you. Those are great guys, and we were very lucky to be able to hang out with them this year at the Roos Club Championship. And if we didn't, you know, win, at least we were able to get our redemption over those guys. So think a whole lot of Mike and the Electric Factory, but your whole region is kind of shaken up. I don't know if you have a full picture of what it's going to look like yet. But one thing that we know for sure, you were talking earlier about just how tightly knit you all are geographically. You are also the population hub of the country. And so having all of that combined, it's you know, on paper, maybe the toughest region in the country.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, yeah, it's come down to Philly and us the first 2 years, but I will not. Boston, I even see it in the Refuge. Like Boston has brought on a lot of players. I don't know what their kind of membership is right now, but I'm concerned about them going forward. Baltimore, it used to be a DMV. It was Delaware, Maryland, Virginia. Virginia is now split, and they're down with the North Carolina guys, and I forget what that region's called. But now we have Baltimore alone. That's part of us. So it's Baltimore, Philly, New York, and Boston. It'll be interesting. It's always been Philly and us the first 2 years, but I have some sneaking suspicions about Boston this coming year, so I got to keep an eye on them. But I hope to be there. I want to be there no matter what, if I qualify or not. Last year I couldn't make it because I was in Bandon, but you know, humble brag. But this year. I'm hoping to be there no matter what.
Good stuff. Well, before we get into some questions, we had kind of made some allusions to it earlier in the episode, but when we first met, it was obviously following the fallout after our regional qualifier and kind of the part of our redemption arc over the past couple years. Part of that was this old guard versus new guard feeling that at least I kind of started to sense on the Refuge. I was a very, very quiet part of an older guard. I joined in like 2019, didn't post. Actually, I had to join sooner than that because I was at the summit. But then I don't even remember what year that was now that I'm thinking about it. But anyways, the important part of it is, you know, I was very quiet when I first started posting. It was just when I was working at Sweetens, just trying to give people like feedback and help on their stay, stuff like that. Just trying to be like a positive contribution. Starting the Roost, it was the same thing, just try to be a positive contribution. And then whack, everything hit the fan. And so ever since then, I feel like maybe I've taken a little bit of a hill turn on the Refuge. But everybody viewed me as this new guard coming in, shaking things up, specifically with some old guard over in North Carolina. Because like you were talking about, North Carolina's been doing it, you know, with the RACDG stuff, even if they weren't calling themselves that. So I'm curious to hear your perspective as you talked about some guys starting to drift off of the Refuge. Our guys, you know, we have that handful that's on the Refuge, but really, you know, when you look at those groups on the Refuge, we're 80, 90 deep, but there's not that interaction. So what is your experience being part of the old guard? I think it's safe to say. And then seeing this new guard come in, and have you felt or seen the kind of dissension that at least I've kind of sensed?
All right. So I can talk about this for hours, but so I joined the Refuge day one. I had never been, I've been an NLU guy since day one. I think it was April, it was actually Masters 2015 that I kind of caught on to the Refuge on Twitter, caught on to NLU on Twitter. And I'm like, who are these idiots? And I remember, I think the first thing that I saw was, Big Randy and Solly playing on Sea Island, which now I understand. I think it's Big Randy that has connection on Sea Island or whatever. But they were funny, and so I've been an NLU fan for it's almost going on 10 years now, I guess, pretty much since the beginning. And so I joined the Refuge day one. I'm not a message board guy. I just turned 45. I'm an old guy. I'm not really kind of a internet person. But when I joined the Refuge, it took me a year to kind of figure out. I went on there because I was told through email that, hey, this is what you missed this year or this day. And I would go on and be like, okay, I had no idea how it worked. And then I finally figured out how it worked and like, oh shit, I can get notifications while I'm working. So I have a desk job, I'm in finance. And so like I can sit on my computer at work and like, oh, I can get notifications at work in terms of anybody that messages me for stuff, for things that I'm watching. So anyway, long story short, like I ended up really probably getting involved in 2019. And I think, it had to be 2019 is when things really started popping off in the Refuge. So that was obviously Laz came in. We can talk about this for hours, but I'm a proponent of Laz I'm a fan of Laz in the sense that like he made the Refuge what it is. And without him, kind of a lot of that, it probably wouldn't have turned into what it was or what it is now, but good or bad. But you know, he created Jeopardy. He created he created the Oregon Trail. He created like all this stuff that was just, it brought the community together. And so I will always have an appreciation for him, and me and him still to this day, or not to this day, I haven't really talked to him in a while, but like we always kind of chatted on the side. So yeah, the old guard, I mean, obviously things came to a peak in 2020, I guess 2019, the end of 2019 was the Stella thing. The Strong Like Stella event that was in Cincinnati that kind of brought a bunch of people together, a bunch of really the true old guards. And I know for a fact that they still have their own WhatsApp chat and kind of gone off of the Refuge. Like they don't need the Refuge anymore because they have their own little thing that's going on. But it was the Strong Like Stella thing that obviously was between Nandy and Laz, two of the probably biggest personalities on the Refuge at the time. And then that obviously blew up even more in 2020 when COVID hit. There was so much going on. I mean, honestly, I remember during COVID, Velvet Steve, who is now back doing the whole caddy thing. Back then he was transcribing all the Trump speeches. And it was just fantastic, fantastic content. And then there's the whole, you know, it's funny because the whole Nandy thing kind of blew up with somebody from one of my best friends here in New York, Brooklyn Jack, getting the whole "Who are you" meme from Nandy in I think that was April 2020, which ended up kind of kicking him off the Refuge for a little bit after that. But so to get to your question in terms of old school versus new school, I'm in the category of there's been good and bad from that standpoint. The old school was chaotic. It was a hell of a lot of fun. It created an awesome community. I'm still friends with some of the guys, over text and whatnot. Like I've gotten their numbers, and there's people like Have We Met in Oklahoma, Adam, and then Baxter up in Minnesota. We've become pretty good friends. And then, so it was chaotic. It was chaotic, and it was maybe a little over the top. I mean, obviously Andy was a big part of that, and Andy was a big part of that, in terms of just the overload of messages, and just you couldn't keep up with it, and it was crazy. Now, since they went private, it's different. It's not as chaotic. It's not as it's probably not as I'm definitely not as engaged as I was back then, but I definitely do keep up with it. And honestly, there's people in quote unquote the new refuge that I find absolutely hysterical. And I think it's changed for the good in the sense that it's a lot more civilized. But there's just not the I don't know. There's not the interaction or the discourse that we had back then. I mean, I guess there is. I don't know. It's tough for me too, because like I don't get involved as much from a commentary standpoint. I read a lot of it, and I'll kind of plug myself in. I mean, honestly, I don't think I ever say a serious thing on the refuge. Like, it's all to make fun of somebody or something, or kind of post to get likes, type thing. But I don't know, I'm rambling, but it's fun, and I still enjoy it. I love some of the new guard. You know, I haven't really met anybody new in there. I'd love to change that this year and going forward, but there's definitely some guys that I really enjoy a lot. But it's different. It's different, but it's not worse, I don't think.
Do you think the new guard had something to do with the old guard creating, you know, their own kind of lanes and stuff like that, and kind of removing themselves a little bit? Or do you think it was just a matter of evolution and things changing, and that's just the direction that it was always?
I mean, there's obviously a line delineation right there is when it went private, when it went behind the paywall. The old guard was pissed off by that, generally speaking. Many of them left. I stuck around just because I was going to support the Nest, the Nest and the NLU guys, no matter what. And I still enjoy it. It keeps me occupied during work. But yeah, that was definitely the that. I mean, and that, I don't know. I mean, that also ended spectacularly. Like, that was the whole line guy thing. That was the whole, which has turned into a whole other thing, which is just, I mean, God. So I just want to point out, so NLU just came out with their 10 year oral history. I'm not kidding you. I have started a document to start a 10 year oral history of the refuge. And I want to talk to the NLU guys about this. I mean, I still have, so that came out in January, 2018. So I still got 4 years with it, but like the timeline of the refuge would be so entertaining. And the wine guy thing, and at that point, like going private, and Andy just going off, and then obviously like new guard, I forget when J Score came on, but God, I that guy's a legend. Obviously there's Desert Duffer who was part of both, and he's gone, and he's a disaster. And there's such good content there that could be like a 6-hour episode. And I've honestly, like, in my downtime, of like started kind of going through a timeline of like what was great stuff. Like House Hotel, I don't know if you remember about House Hotel. Like some of the guys, like guys that you see on Twitter, that are huge, Anti Faldo, there's a few other guys. They were like OG refuge guys that are just huge on Twitter, and we're in the original refuge, and it was a good time. Good times back then, but it's changed. It's different now, but it's still good. I enjoy it.
Well, good. Maybe it was just my perception of what was going on, because, you know, we're in our own little bubble in the High Cotton Club, because we're a little bit more removed from the refuge, and so I'm usually the one fighting the battles or seeing the shots being fired. And so obviously I had my part in that, with the beef comments and, you know, hand up on all of it, if, you know, my misunderstanding, all that. But I'm happy that
But Connor, that's the exact stuff that was the stuff that was great with the old Refuge. And if you're not the one in the weeds, it's so entertaining. Like when you're in the weeds, it sucks. I think I've been there a couple of times, but for people that are outside of that, that's the kind of stuff we love. I mean, the NLU gift stuff that's going on right now. That's just so entertaining to me. It makes my day in terms of I love that. That's the part of the Refuge that I absolutely love.
See, I had to unsubscribe from that thread when we caught a ricochet. Like, you know, we just can't exist without something coming from somewhere. And so there's a point where it's just like, you know, we just need a little break. You know, y'all do your thing. Y'all go ahead and ramble. I'll never see it. So whatever happens. If it's that bad.
You need a thick skin in there. You need a thick skin.
For sure. And I think that, you know, speaking for myself, it'd be a lot easier to have that if I didn't have some of the experiences during that regional thing that happened, that did, you know, a lot of personal shots, a lot of the lack of accountability, responsibility, and then people coming at me personally, you know, through other forms of not even just the Refuge, through social media, through other things. And so it was like, at what point is this, am I supposed to have a thick skin? And at what point is this bullshit? Right.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's where I kind of, I've always taken the Refuge as kind of a playground for me, and I never take it seriously. I don't take it seriously. And when people start getting, I never get into like debates about politics or religion maybe I do sometimes, but like I don't touch on like the rollback or live or something. Like I don't want to get into serious conversations. Like the Refuge is literally there to be a refuge. Like it's for me, it's entertainment, and I'm not about to start arguing back and forth with people. And I think it's ridiculous when people get a little too serious on there.
Yeah, I think we'll move on. But I think it's an interesting dynamic for us as captains, because you know, you have that perspective, and me, I feel like that's almost my role in there, is to like provide the information. I'm just supposed to like be a conduit to the High Cotton Club. You know, obviously I'll have my interactions just as a person, but a lot of my posts are just like, this is an event coming up. A lot of that stuff in response to things, people welcoming people on the roost, roll call and stuff like that. So there's definitely finding that balance. And
yeah,
I think you do a very, very good job of it. So kudos to you. And like I said, hands up, you know, we're always trying to get 1% better all the time. That's what we say in the High Cotton Club. And I think that, from the outside looking in, I hope that it has shown over the past couple of years, and at least we're on the right path, and despite, you know, a bunch of second place finishes.
Oh, stop. You guys have done just fine.
A couple questions from social media, and one actually for me before we get into some life advice. You've been very gracious with your time, and we hope that everybody's enjoyed the conversation. A lot of really good, you know, I don't think that there's been some discourse like this openly about, you know, roost to roost and just captain to captain. So I hope the people are enjoying this and enjoying some inside baseball. But a question, just, you know, as me scheduling courses as a captain, I have a little bit of an advantage because I was a pro before. I have pretty good connections around the area. And then we've been able to make some other new ones that have been great, like Park Mammoth, obviously, and Cherokee Ridge. But you're in a spot where I cannot imagine that is easy.
No, it's not. Private clubs are obviously very private and difficult and expensive. Public courses are packed all the time. And it's extremely hard to find places. And that's why we've kind of latched on to places that are easy to work with and will give us the time and be helpful to us. So that's been places like Keeney Park, places like Innis. Innis has been fantastic. We're going to go back there every year as long as they'll have us. You know, Links at Unionvale, that's the place that I said was my spiritual home up in the Hudson Valley. I know I've been going there for years, and I know the pro there. So that's been extremely helpful. And he's able to lock up, you know, block off 40 tee times for us once a year. But overall, like something like Bethpage, like that's just a pain in the ass. I mean, it's literally it's a state run organization, so we have to deal with all that bureaucratic stuff. You know, here in New York, it's once you find a place that'll work with you, you kind of latch onto it. And we don't have those, and they're expensive. Like now, especially post COVID, the COVID thing has really shown from a golf fee standpoint, at least here in New York. You know, we used to do things for 60, 70, 80 bucks. And now it's, you know, probably we're well over $100 just at cost to, for the tee times, let alone any sort of gifts or whatever we want to do for that. So, it's difficult, but, I think at this point, like that was a very stressful thing for me the first couple of years as being a captain. And now we've found the people that I'll work with. That'll work with us, and latched onto them, and that's probably what we're going to kind of continue going forward, because it's too much energy, and I don't have the time, and kind of the people that, you know, are in the committee with me don't have the time to kind of figure out something with some public or private course. I'm a member of a club in Westchester, which we ran an event there one time, so that I can always lean on them potentially, but that, again, that's kind of an expensive one too. So yeah, we've latched onto a few, and we're probably just going to continue to do that.
Good stuff. Matthew Seneca wants me to ask you about Spieth.
So Seneca is at Cinnamon on the Refuge. Again, an old guard. He's one of the main guys in my committee, and we like to give each other shit. Probably I give him more shit than he gives me. But he's probably one of the big Spieth loyalists ever. He's very forward on that, on the Refuge. I despise Spieth. I think he's a great person, human. I can't stand him on the golf course. I'm also, just so people know, I'm a Tiger hater, if we want to go there. I was a Phil guy growing up. Obviously, that's kind of turned on me. But I'm a huge Rory guy. So that's why I also hate Spieth, because he's basically the, well, was. Spieth is just a guy now. Rory doesn't really have to worry about him, but Rory's my boy.
And what about your onboarding questionnaire?
Oh, man. Yeah, so that's kind of evolved over the year. So our onboarding, it's really good, because it's a good icebreaker for guys that join, and it's automated. So once you join the Discord server, like, you automatically get a welcome email that has all of those questions. And so I have it up right here right now, actually. So we ask, we really ask 13 questions. That's where are you located? What's your puck alliance? So we kind of became a huge hockey chat. So hockey is obviously huge here in the Northeast. So we ask people who they root for. Then it's favorite beer, bourbon, poison, best fried chicken spot. That took over another one. So these are all, by the way, inside jokes or some sort of discourse that we've had over the year. hidden gem course in the area, Spieth, yay or nay. Sleeveless hoodies, again, an inside joke, opinions on those. Favorite pizza place, obviously New York pizzas, and really New Haven pizza, and anywhere around here is huge. You a cop, which is, people have to answer that, honestly.
I love that one. That's fantastic. You didn't have to answer it.
So we actually had a cop join. Well, there was an inside joke. One of the guys, I'm not going to get into it, but we had somebody that acted like a cop for the longest time. And we were just like, he's definitely a cop. Like, he didn't act like a cop, but we always said, oh, this guy's a cop. We can't tell him anything. But he's one of our OGs. handicap, best part of a brownie, middle or corner. If you're a middle or corner guy, we have team middle, team corner. how do you take your hot dog? You know, we don't like the ketchup guys. It's mustard, relish, whatever. And then one that we added recently was most overrated food. We get some really good answers on that one. So that's kind of fun to have some back and forth about. But yeah, that's what we ask. And it's honestly a great way for the guys, if they really want to lean into it, for the new guys to kind of answer those questions in a funny manner or whatever. And it really kind of gets them into the, because Discord, I don't know, do you guys do Discord?
We do. And we have a thing now. It was a spreadsheet, but now it's a form. It's a lot less fun. It's, you know, where are you from? What's your handicap? You know, tell me how I can get in touch with you. you know, are you part of the refuge, that kind of stuff. Not quite the humor you guys have.
Yeah, a Discord can be overwhelming. So it's a good way for them to kind of like, when you get in there, it's like, okay, kind of get your feel within our main chat with that. And then they can kind of work themselves around. So it's been good.
That's good stuff. Mr. Sachs, looks like Dan Sachs. He wants me to ask you why Indy's football team is so bad every year. He says you'll love it. I have a feeling you won't. We don't have to spend much time on this.
No, we don't need to spend much time on it. First of all, Sachs is my – we were the first two years, two-time crown champions, which is the event that I held at the Links at Univale, which is talking about my spiritual home. And then the second year, we held it at my home course, my club. So we won it the first 2 years. And he still likes to give me shit about Notre Dame. So Notre Dame is my college. Yeah, it's my college football team. I freaking love them. Always will. I grew up as a Northeast Catholic. There's not a lot of colleges up here to root for. And so as a Catholic, you either root for BC or you root for Notre Dame. And I had a couple cousins that went to Notre Dame. So that was an easy one.
Nice. And this is something not exactly for you, but I'm curious to hear your take on it. One of the assistant superintendents up at Park Mammoth, where we host our major, the Extinction, he asked and maybe just threw out a challenge, 9-hole four-man match play versus the maintenance crew at the Extinction. I haven't seen this before. Really has my interest. Maybe something that you guys can take into play up there.
That is a really – I would love to do that at Innes with the GM / maintenance guys at Innes. Like, so one of the head superintendent at Innes, he worked at Piping Rock, which is – I don't know if Piping Rock is one of the best courses on Long Island. He went to Shinnecock. Then he came to Innes to grow that place out. He's left there. He went to Hudson National to help that place grow up. And now I forget where he went to now. He went to another big course. But anyway, wonderful, wonderful person. I would love to play a match against the GM at Innes, or the old GM at Innes. I don't think he's still there, or still the actual GM. He actually was an ex-pro. And his kid, two or three of his kids went to University of Illinois and played golf for Illinois, which obviously is a huge program. And I know he still does like the senior AM events now. Or whatever, maybe not AM. I don't know if he's reinstated AM or not. But anyway, God, I would love to do that. That would be so much fun having a match against those guys.
Yeah, that'd be a good time. Well, before we get out of here, some life advice. We end the show every week with this. Is there anything that you would like to leave the audience with? Kind of leave your mark on Dialed In.
Oh, Jesus. Don't have kids. So I'm 45. I have three kids under eight, under nine, I guess. I have a 9-year-old and twin 5-year-olds. Life advice: have fun. Here's my thing. I don't take anything seriously. Like, I go through life just trying to laugh and enjoy myself. And I almost take nothing seriously in my life, and I kind of live day by day. So I guess that's probably. I'm not one that reads those self-help books or anything like that, but that's probably my thing. Enjoy life.
I like it. I'll take it back to my OG. Just treat people right, do the right thing, and everything should work out. That's how we've tried to build the High Cotton Club, and it hasn't always worked out. I mean, as we're recording, I see notifications from the refuge flashing across the top of my screen. We'll see what that is. Hopefully people enjoy the pod, but no fires come from it. But either way, it's been a real pleasure to have you on. And we appreciate you taking the time to sit down and talk with me, the rest of the High Cotton Club. And we look forward to seeing the NYC, you know, battle throughout the season, hopefully come out on top in the Roost Regional. And who knows, maybe we'll get to see you right here in High Cotton Country at Sweet Absolutely. Cove.
Connor, I love you, bud. This was fun. And yeah. We will. I am going to make it a mission of mine this year to be at Sweetens, and I hope to see you there, and we'll end up kicking your ass.
I have a feeling I'll be there either way, but we'll see about that last part.
All right, bud. Appreciate it.
Thanks, sir.
rich. Some guys like it quiet. Some guys like it loud. This is.
You know, Gator needed to look like he needed some exercise. I don't know.
Of course, the conditions now that he has to play the shot test anyone.
They've come a long way together, Jim, those two. It's a great story.